The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.
Hello and welcome to ILTV's Zion News and the Blaze Radio Network. Coming up in today's newscast, a senior Egyptian intelligence official comes to Tel Aviv to discuss regional peace. A newly published report claims to link alleged Israeli nuclear bomb testing to dead sheep in Australia. And the government looks to finally renegotiate a Dead Sea mining agreement that's nearly 70 years old. Egyptian intelligence official Abbas Kamal was in Tel Aviv Wednesday to discuss the ongoing peace efforts in the region, including Palestinian reconciliation and a ceasefire between Israel and Hamas. This also comes amidst ongoing talks with other involved parties in Cairo, including both the DFLP and the Popular Front for the Liberation of Palestine terror group. According to Israeli officials, Kamal also discussed the possibility of Hamas returning the two Israeli captives and two Israeli bodies that have been held in the Strip for 4 years. Though it was most likely offered in the form of a prisoner exchange with Hamas terror group. The ceasefire discussions are now begun after last weekend's massive uptick in violence from Gaza. Terrorists in the Strip launched over 180 rockets and dozens of incendiary balloons over the border into Israeli communities. Israel in turn bombarded around 150 Hamas positions in Gaza until the violence essentially stopped. Defense Minister Lieberman has expressed that the end of retaliations and the opening of the Kerem Shalom crossing yesterday were incentives to keep the calm. But Israel has also reiterated that a formal ceasefire with Hamas has not been reached and will not be reached until the bodies of Hadar Golden and Oron Shaul, as well as captives Avraham Mengistu and Hisham al-Sayed, are returned. Now, Egyptian intel official Kamal is also slated to meet with PA President Mahmoud Abbas later today for similar reasons. But those talks may be a non-starter, since Hamas and Fatah have failed multiple times to reach a reconciliation agreement. The most recent attempt was in October 2017, but efforts have stood still since then. Further, Abbas even just made a speech on television yesterday, reiterating his belief that Hamas, quote, principally does not have intentions to achieve reconciliation, end quote. In related news, the United States' Middle East peace team has just released a joint statement regarding their long-awaited and still undisclosed peace plan. Officials close to the team said, quote, "No one will be fully pleased with our proposal, but that's the way it must be if real peace is to be achieved. Peace can only succeed if it's based on realities," end quote. Unfortunately, that too may be a non-starter, though, as the Palestinians have largely ignored the United States as a partner in peace ever since December 2017, when President Trump announced recognition of Jerusalem as Israel's capital. Formal talks between Palestinian and American officials since then have been practically non-existent.
Aside from the recently passed legislation in Israel that has visibly upset much of the Jewish diaspora, pro-Israel groups are becoming more and more worried that the rift between the United States and the Jewish state is growing rapidly. And the critics are now pointing primarily to recent congressional primaries where perceived anti-Israel candidates are advancing, more specifically Ilhan Omar, who once called Israel an apartheid regime and just won the Democratic nomination in the District of Minneapolis. Well, joining me now in the studio with more is Chair of the Democrats Abroad in Israel, Heather Stone, and via Skype, Abe Katzman, Chair of the Republicans Overseas in Israel. Thank you both very much for joining me.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right. So first of all, I'll start with you, Heather. Is it a fair assessment to say that the Democrats are adopting as a party a more distant position from Israel than the Republicans?
No, I don't think so at all. I think that the Democrats are becoming more a reflection of who America is and also becoming more of a big tent, younger, more representative of Americans overall, and becoming more progressive. What that means is that there's going to be probably more Jews in the Congress coming up, and there, in fact, will be a few Muslims in the Congress.
Of course.
But that doesn't mean that it's going to necessarily be less in favor of Israel, and that there just may be more progressive policies for Americans overall.
All right. Abe, how would you respond?
I'm sorry, Heather, but I really think that you've got your head in the sand on this one. This is major stuff going on. The party is lurching to the left, and included in that move to the left is a move toward anti-Israel. Look at who the stars of the party are. at this point. I mean, even starting with somebody like Bernie Sanders, but you have her name is escaping me now. Alexandria
Ocasio-Cortez.
Well, anyway, the anti-Israel, even though she doesn't know what she's talking about when she opens her mouth, this is very similar to what is going on in the UK, where the Labour Party has not only made room for anti-Israel, anti-Zionism, and even, I would say, anti-Semitism, but has put out the welcome mat. And I think the same thing is happening with the Democrats. It's unfortunate. It's terrible.
I have to say that, you know, these are people who are going to become junior congresspeople, okay? And they are going to learn the ropes. And they are having some star qualities because they've managed to have some upsets in some safe districts, like taking down Crowley in New York by Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. I don't think that that necessarily makes her a star in a 435-seat Congress, okay? Sure. She's not going to be the head of any particular intelligence committee or security committee.
It's the beginning of her career.
And in the meantime, she's going to learn a lot. Okay. And I think that that's a process of dialogue. And even the JDCA, which is a spokesgroup for Jewish members of Jewish Democratic members of Congress, has said that they want to engage in dialogue with Rashida Tlaib and with Ilhan Omar.
All right, but I will point out that, you know, apart from Ilhan Omar, you know, there's been a lot of this criticism sounded in the past, but not only on the left. It's also been against the right. You know, there have been Arthur Jones from the KKK. John Fitzgerald, Patrick Little, and Paul Neelan. But there's also, you know, Dan Cole, who founded J Street. So there are a lot of kind of. Who ran for the Democrats, I must say.
Yes.
So that it's all over the place. And so how would you know, really? How could you categorize one party versus the other? Abe, let me go to you for that.
Well, there are certainly trends in both parties. And when you talk about things going on like anti-Israel feeling on the right, it's minimal. You know, they just had an alt-right protest in D.C. this week. And 30 people showed up. That's the movement. Meanwhile, you look at the polling, the people who broadly support Israel are overwhelmingly Republican, and the people who do not are overwhelmingly Democrat. It's dangerous. I think it's a terrible situation to be in. I think it has to do with the politicization of absolutely everything that is going on now, so that if President Trump is pro-Israel, there are people who decide they therefore must be anti-Israel just because they have to be against everything that President Trump
is. Look, that Unite the Right rally that took place this past week was a splintering group, and part of the group specifically did not show up in order to try to mainstream themselves further. Mm-hmm. I think that taking that as a specific case in point is just
An anecdote,
okay? Sure. The fact that they're actually marching in the streets and that they marched last year in Charlottesville is just outrageous. But taking a look at what's happening overall is to say that we only have two Republican Jewish members of Congress as opposed to 22 Democrats, okay? Jewish Democrats. And that's exactly the way Jewish voters in America vote, okay, that it's about 75-25%, that they vote based on democratic principles and democratic values. And those are the values on which we believe that the United States was built and the things that brought us to the United States and that we think that the United States should continue to strive towards in order to form a more perfect union.
Well, so you remind me of my next question, is that, you know, how do the Democrats and how really does any party, the Republicans as well, how do you vet the characteristics of somebody who joins the party? You know, because you have the Republicans who have denounced people like Arthur Jones, but yet there he is.
There are certain things that are outside the scope of the party, okay? And those are things like, you know, the KKK is outside of the scope of the party. That's not going to be accepted, mm-hmm. okay? You know, if you take a racist line, okay, that is not going to be accepted in the party, okay? Mm-hmm. But the tent is wide, and it involves a progressive line, it involves a more conservative line. If Joe Manchin can be a member of the Democratic Party, and Bernie Sanders can caucus with the Democrats, okay, then you can see the wide range within which the Democratic Party can hold.
Abe, final word?
Yeah, a number of points. First, the fact that that Jews are voting more heavily Democratic proves very little, because on the whole, the less Jewishly connected they are, the more likely they are to end up voting Democrat. In fact, you see the flip side, the opposite numbers among Americans living in Israel. And even though the numbers are about 50-50 in terms of who is registered Democrat and Republican within Israel among the Americans here, the vote swings wildly Republican. So that tells you something about the people for whom Israel is a major consideration. You look at what happened with the party platforms a couple of years ago. The Republican platform says support for Israel is support for America. The Democrats debated a condemnation, a plank in the platform condemning Israel and the occupation, and it was voted down 55-45, and to chants of free Palestine, and from the river to the sea, Palestine will be free. That would not happen among the Republicans. This is dangerous. I am horrified, actually, that people are shutting their eyes to it. I think it's a very dangerous situation for Israel to become such a partisan issue. I would love to see the Democrats be as pro-Israel as the Republicans. There are reasons why it's being divided, but the division is extremely dangerous.
The Democrats are strong supporters of Israel. Abe, Democrats are strong supporters of Israel. They can disagree with particular policies of a particular government of Israel and still support the state. And that has happened time and time again.
I see weak need support. Even all those
you
Jewish
don't have
Democrats,
to necessarily agree with a particular policy that's being conducted by the government of the state of Israel and still be a friend to the state of Israel. And Democratic administrations and Democratic presidents, including Obama, have supported the government of Israel and have given money and military aid to the government of Israel.
All right. Well, with that, unfortunately, we do have to end. But thank you so much, Heather. Abe, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Right. Attorney General Avichai Mandelblit has just warned Israel's rabbinate that he would end their monopoly on kosher certification if they didn't comply with a high court ruling by the end of the month deadline. The court ruled back in May 2017 that by September 2018, the rabbinate would have to end the practice of taking direct payments for inspectors to review their products.
The outline for a new system was due in June, but hasn't been submitted, and Mandelblit has already reportedly told Chadashot News that it would not be possible for the rabbinate to get an extension. The news came to Prime Minister Netanyahu, Finance Minister Kahlon, and Religious Services Minister Azulai in the form of a letter from Mandelblit. In it, the Attorney General wrote that if the rabbinate couldn't comply with the High Court's decision, then he would have no choice but to end the rabbinate's monopoly and allow private institutions to grant kashrut certificates. Currently, kosher certificates for businesses in Israel are attained through the local state kashrut committees under the umbrella of the rabbinate. Inspectors from the committee then oversee that kitchens and restaurants are adhering to strict Orthodox kosher law, or else they don't issue a certificate. Furthermore, the businesses must pay the committee for the regular inspections. A finance ministry report shows that the kashrut industry alone in Israel drained the economy of roughly 2.8 billion shekels per year, with the rabbinate's bills coming to 600 million, causing more expensive food pricing. Additionally, there have been many criticisms of impropriety in the current system. Just this past weekend, five suspects, including a senior Israeli rabbinate official from the kashrut inspection committee, were arrested for bribery. According to police reports, while no items were deemed kosher that weren't, the official in question did, on a large number of occasions, accept bribes and other benefits in exchange for benefits he illegally gave to others as part of his duties.
35-year-old youth sports coach and father of two from Herzliya, Bino Reinhorn, has just been arrested on suspicion of contacting at least 140 young girls for the purposes of molestation, rape, sexual harassment, computer crimes, indecent acts, and more against children between the ages of 9 and 15.
According to the police statement, quote, "This is one of the most serious and severe incidents of pedophilia, both in terms of the severity of the offenses and the scope of the activities, which were revealed to Israeli police in connection with sex offenses against minors via the internet," end quote. Further, "In light of the serial pattern of the suspect's activities, if there is any suspicion among parents, educators, family members, etc., that a minor may have been one of the victims, we urge them to contact the police." The investigation was conducted jointly between police and the Lahav 433 Serious Crimes Unit, who arrested and detained Reinhorn around 2 weeks ago. Reinhorn's defense attorneys have held to his innocence, as has his wife. But Reinhorn, who was an Israeli women's junior national handball team coach, as well as a coach for teens between 13 and 17 years old, is suspected of having a very elaborate system in place. The police said that he had been acting for years, opening fake profiles on social media, portraying himself as a modeling agent or a swimsuit designer, etc., and then he would electronically contact young girls to persuade them to pose for him. But police described the content as being of a sexual nature to the point of carrying out acts of sodomy and rape. At one point in the investigation, police allegedly even monitored the suspect's actions in real time. Under Israeli law, it's considered molestation or even rape if you persuade a minor to carry out sexual acts over the internet, even without physical touch. Reinhorn is reportedly not cooperating with investigators.
An explosive new report has just been published by the Science and Global Security Journal, which claims to have definitive proof that Israel conducted atomic weapons testing over the Indian Ocean in 1979. Tests that, if true, would have been in direct violation of both international and American law. What's more, researchers say they found this evidence by studying sheep. The study was headed by Christopher Wright from the Australian Defence Force Academy and Lars-Erik de Geer, a former member of the Swedish Defence Research Agency. What they claim to have found is that in October and November of 1979, traces of radioactive isotopes had been found in the thyroid glands of dead sheep in Australia. Allegedly, samples from the sheep were sent for testing in the United States, which was never made public, but it seemed to indicate that the grass the sheep had eaten was contaminated with fallout from the nuclear tests the month prior. Just before 1 a.m. on September 22, 1979, a double flash near the Prince Edward Islands in the Indian Ocean was recorded by American satellite Vela 6911. A massive sound wave was also recorded as having occurred at the same moment of the flash, and researchers in the study analyzed that too. Over the years, several ideas for what caused the flash have been raised, but the prevailing hypothesis is that it was indeed an atomic explosion. And now, after this latest study was published, nuclear weapons expert at Stanford University, Leonard Weiss, went one step further. Taking to the Bulletin of Atomic Scientists, Weiss wrote that Israel is the only country that had the technical capability and the political motivation to conduct such a discrete experiment. Former United States President Jimmy Carter also wrote in his memoirs that the United States did indeed suspect Israel of having carried out a test with the help of the apartheid South Africa. Israeli ambassador to New Zealand Yitzhak Gerberg, on the other hand, called the allegations against Israel simply ridiculous. Regardless, now the question lies in how the sheep were killed if the bomb was detonated over open international waters. Well, the study claims that the fallout had most likely scattered due to ocean storms and that many parts of Australia may have been contaminated. In major news surrounding the Dead Sea, Israel is now reportedly looking to auction off the rights to mine the salty body of water by 2022, 8 years ahead of schedule, all in a bid to prevent the exacerbation of an environmental tragedy. Currently, the rights belong to Israel Chemicals Ltd., a billion-dollar company that harvests sediments and minerals from the Dead Sea's waters to be used as fertilizers, flame retardants, and much, much more. Their products are sold worldwide, and Israel gave the company a nearly 70-year-long concessionary contract due to end in 2030. But the Dead Sea is and has long been threatened by environmental disaster. The sea already shrinks by about a meter per year, leaving behind sinkholes, desert, and an ever more fragile ecosystem. And Israeli estimates show that of the nearly 800 million cubic meters of water that's lost annually, nearly 250 to 350 million cubic meters is lost due to mining.
And that's why Israel now hopes to remove ICL's concession and renegotiate the mining rights under new licenses.
Today, we are talking mainly about downsizing the area of the concession and keeping it in the right size to fit the Dead Sea Works or whoever comes in their place and needs in the area, because the concession today is very, very wide.
הזדמנות חד פעמית. הזדמנות חד פעמית להתאים את כל הסטנדרטים של הפעילות של המפעלים וכל ההשלכות שלהם הסביבתיות על כל המרחב. הזדמנות חד פעמית לשנות את הסטנדרטים, להעלות אותם למה שמקובל במקומות אחרים בארץ, כמובן, וכמובן במקומות אחרים בעולם.
Israel could show leadership here in helping to stabilize the Dead Sea by putting in requirements that instead of just speak to the exploitation of the Dead Sea from the mineral industry, to the sustainable utilization of the resources of the Dead Sea to benefit future generations, not just the profit motive or of this particular generation.
Now, Israel explains that while this renegotiation would be beneficial for the environment, the country, and for future generations, it's also been stressed that it's in ICL's best interest too. Not only does Israel Chemicals have the right to first refusal under the terms of the current agreement, the Israeli government will have the right to interfere with ICL's Dead Sea investments starting 2020, something that could have major implications on how ICL does business anyhow. So the only problem now is getting the rest of the region on board, as co-founder of EcoPeace Gidon Bromberg noted.
It's not only Israel, it's also Jordan in relation to the industry in the south, and it's Israel, Jordan, and Syria who are taking the waters of the Jordan from the north. And therefore, there needs to be an integrated effort, but that doesn't mean that one side should not be required to do what they can.
And now for this week's Top 5 with ILTV's Emmanuel Kadosh.
If you have yet to visit the Holy Land, let me tell you a little something about the culture here. Israelis are very laid back. They like to hang out by the beach with a nice cold beer after a work and soak up the sun every chance that they get. So I'm here to give you guys ILTV's top five list of microbreweries. Fifth on our list is the Dancing Camel Brewing Company. Established back in 2005, this is the only brewery inside the city of Tel Aviv. The Dancing Camel aims to craft the perfect Israeli beer using local ingredients to create a flavor that Israelis will love. The American-style brewery is known best for its state-of-the-art crafted kosher brews, and due to that, it's closed on Shabbat, but you got the rest of the week to visit. Fourth up is Beer Bazaar. With over 100 different types of Israeli craft beers and a few of their very own brews, Beer Bazaar has found a way for guests to find out which they like. A beer sampler with 10 types of craft beers in a shot glass. Both an amazing way to find the perfect beer for you and share with friends. Third on our list is the Herzl Brewery. Originally opened in order to fight major corporations that dominate the beer industry, they strive to create unbeatable beers and wish to avoid making the everyday boring brew. So, if you're in the mood to try a new and interesting beer, head over to Herzl Brewery. Second up is Labira Brewery, located in the city of Haifa. The brewery features a variety of 6 different beers, freshly brewed and rich in flavor. The brewery itself is one of Israel's few authentic beer cellars, offering a warm and intimate atmosphere. So, take a road trip outside the city of Tel Aviv and check out Labira Brewery. First on our list is the Shapiro Brewery, located near Jerusalem and was created by the Shapiro brothers, Danny, Itzik, and Avi. Even years after the opening, this brewery is still remaining a small operation known for marketing itself with short, clever viral videos. Finally, Jerusalemites are proud to have their very own beer. That's all for today's Top 5. Back to you.
The Hebrew Word of the Day is brought to you by IDC Samru Ulpan, open to everyone.
And now for our Hebrew Word of the Day. Today's word is special. You can eat it, pet it, and even test it for nuclear isotopes. I'm, of course, talking about sheep, or in Hebrew, keves. Now, you may not think so, but kvasim, or plural for sheep, are really important. Using evidence left behind by dead kvasim or sheep, researchers believe that they found evidence of Israel's nuclear testing in the 1970s. The first mammal to be successfully cloned was Dali the keves, or sheep. And many byproducts, such as lanolin and delicious dairy foods, also come from keves. And if these examples weren't enough reason to think that they're amazing, then did you know that kvasim or sheep have scent glands in their feet? Look it up. Now let's take a look at the weather forecast. Tonight will be partly cloudy and warm with a low of 77 or 25 degrees Celsius. The weekend will be partly cloudy as well with very little change in temperatures, and the high will be about 87 or 31 degrees Celsius.